Just the lady there, just use your mic because we are recording.
Linda Nkumishe, TMI.
Mina Nkumthokozo Sizondi from TMR.
Edson Rajimana, TMR.
Joseph Katanga, TMR. Tabo Gazi, TMR.
I'm Grace from Communication.
Now, there was just one fault in terms of TMR. Everybody's TMR, but I believe everybody's got positions in TMR. I know that's a DDG there, that's a DDG here. That's a CFO, if I'm not mistaken. That's the MLO, Head of Communications, DG, Chief Director. Yeah, so I don't know what positions the other people hold. As we go further, as we engage further on, you can just give us your position. So if you give us wrong information, we can report you to the Minister of the DG. We don't want to say TMR has given us the wrong information. There's a lady that has just walked in. Can you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Zinzi Lennon from the PMG, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. DDGs, I don't know, Mr. Buza, or Chief Director, who's going to lead the thing? Okay, DDG. Members, anyone that wants to add something before we start or say something or are unhappy with the DMR representation or the collective of DMR that's here? All happy with it? Good. So we don't have to read in the media tomorrow that you are unhappy with the collective that's here. It's fine, Masamba?
Chairman, I am obviously a politician and I reserve my right.
Okay, we respect that, Masamba. We respect that. DDG, over to you.
Honorable Chairperson and the members of the committee, it's a pleasure for the department to come and present the budget vote to the NCOP. We pretty much followed the structure that we presented to the Mineral Resource Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. And maybe before I go into the presentation, if I can just present the apology from the Director General. He might be joining us later during the presentation. Katenda, next slide. The split of the department has been finalized effectively from the beginning of this financial year. The Department of Minerals and Energy does not exist anymore. We have energy on the one side and mineral resources on the one side. And the presentation is divided in line with the programs in the department, program 1 to program 4, and the different DDGs will be taking us through the presentation. The next slide just gives us an overview of how the department is structured after the split, with the three line functions: mine health and safety, mineral regulation, mineral policy and promotion, and corporate services and office of the CFO as the four programs in the Department of Mineral Resources. The CFO will take us through the detailed finances, and the different programs will then go into details
you, Honorable Chair, Mr. This slide basically presents an overview of what the budget for the DMR looks like for the 2010 medium-term expenditure framework or period. Just in terms of presenting how the information is packaged, as the Chief Inspector of Mines indicated, we have packaged this information in terms of the various programs that we have within the department, obviously starting there with the administration program, which is really there to support all the other three programs that are focusing on the key mandate of the department, with those allocations that are starting from 239 million in the first year, growing up to 271 in the last year of the MTEF. And one of the questions maybe that would come out of this slide as one looks at it is numbers around Program 4, where they would appear to be relatively higher in comparison to the other programs, particularly Program 2. As we move to the next slide, we will present this information in such a way that it indicates how our budget is divided between what we refer to as current payments, which is really payments for goods and services, as well as the money that we receive but transfer to other parties like our state-owned entities. So there is a portion of the budget that sits in the Program 4 that really relates to the entities that that report to the Minister of Mineral Resources. And under Program 1, that budget basically comprises primarily goods and services as well as the compensation of employees budget. But the goods and services portion also relates to services that are rendered to the other three programs in terms of supporting them. So that's why percentage-wise it might look to be relatively higher in relation to the other programs. The other observation from this slide would be the change in relation to the previous year estimates of national expenditure. Right at the bottom there, where we indicating a difference of about 4.0 billion in the first year and 4.3 billion in the second year. This is just a comparison between our current ENE, or estimate of national expenditure, as the DMR, in comparison with what was contained in the previous year's ENE document that was published as the GME. So by implication, that portion of the budget has moved over to the Department of Energy, and the remaining portion, which is the departmental total above, is what remains within the DMR out of what used to be GME previously. If we can move on to the next slide. This slide presents the same numbers, but in different formats. This is just to enable a better interpretation in terms of where does this money go in terms of the three classification areas. As I indicated earlier on, the second column, which is titled current payments or current, relates to those services or those areas where we spend money in terms of things like our traveling costs, cost of accommodation, in particular reference to Program 1, and other operational needs that we may need to fund as part of doing the business as mandated in terms of our legislation. The capital portion relates to any expenditure that we incur that basically on a per item basis exceeds 5,000 rand in terms of the current policy of government. So if we buy things like computers, furniture, and the cost is above the threshold, we classify it as capital. We haven't got any massive capital infrastructure type of projects per se. And then on the transfer, this is where we receive money on behalf of either third party or like primarily this relates to the entities. And the breakdown of those figures, as we go into the program presentation, there would be an indication of within minors and safety inspectorate, that 5.3 million would indicate to you exactly which entity it goes to. So this is really just to indicate that while you have those totals, the portion that really gets spent within the department itself is the 607 million that we're looking at the bottom there. The other money, while we have oversight over it and how it gets spent, it really doesn't get dispersed within the department itself. It's a transfer payment. Chef, if you would allow, while I'm still on the floor, I could just take the portion of the program one that relates to the office of the CFO, and then the other colleagues would cover the part that relates to the corporate services. This next slide really just highlights, and it takes from the our strategic plan for 2010 and beyond, some of those key projects that we are spending money on as the office of the CFO, starting with the implementation of the office accommodation plan. Historically, as a department, we've been having challenges in terms of adequacy of our office accommodation, where we outgrew some of the facilities that we've been using. So we then came up with a plan to say, how do we make sure that we address that particular need? So you would have a combination of areas where certain buildings are being refurbished to open them up and align them to the new standard that is published and agreed within government to say officials within particular levels would sit in an open plan, others would sit in closed offices. And areas where we find that the building is no longer suitable, we would then relocate that particular office to a new premises. So that comes with a number of cost aspects. There are relocation costs involved. In some instances, you buy new furniture, you buy new infrastructure in terms of ICT. So within Program 1 under the Office of the CFO, that is one of the main cost drivers for this financial year. Linked to that is the implementation of the ICT infrastructure maintenance plan, or what we also refer to as the ICT technology refresh. Our business as a department is really driven. There is a huge shift towards reliance on information management system, wherein as applicants or as our clients come through to apply for either licenses or the inspectors are going out to do audits and inspections, there's a need to capture all that information and make sure that it's available when there is a need to make certain decisions. So we've invested quite a lot in terms of making sure that we've got the right infrastructure, and we continue to do that so that we are not left behind in terms of technology, because you then begin to have those types of problems where your ICT environment cannot respond to the business needs. So that's one area that we have highlighted as one of the key issues that we need to be addressing in this year. Linked to that, there's also an issue of the disaster recovery plan, where we touch on issues around making sure that we've got a proper backup system. We also have a proper disaster recovery center, where if our building in head office was to catch fire, we could be able to recover and continue with our business as if that disaster never occurred. And then linked to that, there is also a major project that looks at our business as a department, and also we look at conducting a gap analysis between the systems that we have currently as to whether they are adequately supporting the business of the department. And that process results in the upgrading or reviewing of some of our existing systems or the entire development in terms of that process. So we will be engaging in that particular project as one of our key areas of consideration in our strategy. And then the acquisition of office supplies, this becomes more of an operational issue, but it's quite a huge area of focus in terms of the money that we spend on that. As I indicated earlier on, that the program one, we have taken a centralized budget approach where all these things are budgeted for all the programs, and we spend the money from program one on behalf of all the other programs. And then lastly, in terms of our process of getting to a clean audit report and making sure that we publish financial statements on time, there is quite a number of processes, process re-engineering, monitoring, and making sure that things are done within the legislative framework. We engage in a specific process that addresses that particular aspect. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Did you
change
for your carry on? Let's welcome the big chief. I've just learned a little bit of Chinese. Didi, you have learned much more. I was just inquiring from your colleagues whether you have been kept back or held back by the Chinese, because they are so impressed with you that I was worried that you're going to lose the DG. We are one of our capable DGs. Welcome, advocates, Sandile, and those that have come with you. That's the DG. Those of the committee members that does not know the DG of Mineral Resources, that's the sweet, what would I say, sexy gentleman sitting there. Honorable Chen, he's just come back from China. Welcome, DG, and the member that has walked in now, Mr. Honorable Sinclair from the Northern Cape. Welcome as well.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As per your request, I'm the acting Chief Director of Management Services to address that part. I'll be dealing with the second part of the program one, which is corporate services. The department, through the process of splitting into two, presented some human resource challenges that we are planning to deal with through the development of an integrated HR plan and a retention strategy. The Department of Mineral Resources is one of the departments that contains a lot of scarce skills occupations, so we need to really focus our energies in terms of human resource issues and to ensure that our processes and plans are aligned to the strat plan that has been approved. So this is one of the critical projects that we'll be embarking upon to ensure that we fill in the gaps within the department. We'll also, through the HR plan and retention strategy, capacitate DME, which will do that through the implementation of a talent management plan that we have. I think we have noticed and through experience that we need to ensure that we become creative in terms of implementation of talent management strategy in the department, so that we're able to attract and retain committed and experienced people, or skilled people, for them to be able to carry out the mandate of the department. The split also touched on some of the governance structures that we had in terms of corporate services, and amongst others, we need to establish, we're in the process of establishing structures such as a departmental bargaining chamber or council to ensure that we still continue maintaining sound employee relations with our organized labor, as well as job evaluation panel meetings or panel committee to ensure that we're adhering to compliance issues in terms of DPSA as well. Very critical in this financial year, we are also planning to review the current HRD strategy, because it was also covering the Department of Energy. So we also need to review that, develop a strategy that is specifically talking to issues of mineral resources with regards to training and development across all levels, from senior management level up to the lowest level within the organization. And that will be specific to the Department of Mineral Resources. As per the process of developing the strat plan of the department, we have also identified some core values that the department employees need to conduct themselves through. And it's very critical that we conduct awareness campaigns to ensure that they are aware of the expected conduct within the department, and that is enforced throughout the levels of the organization. So from my side, those are the critical areas that we'll be focusing on to ensure that we are able to support the line function in them carrying out their mandate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm in charge of compliance for the department. The emphasis that we are placing going forward in the new year is creating a more wholesome environment in which we can, you know, develop our monitoring and evaluation framework in terms of aligning strategies of the departments and entities reporting thereto. So basically, we have put in place a system where we are going to be in terms of the planning process and in-year monitoring in terms of implementation and so forth. There is a robust framework which involves certain risk management practices and also the rollout of a code of conduct in order to ensure that we reduce issues of potential fraud risk. So that's just one of the key areas that we will be looking at. And I'll hand over to my colleague from communication.
On the communication front, the Department of Mineral Resources is, of course, a new department, and we need to create an understanding of that in the public space. The industry is also facing significant challenges. So on the one hand, we are developing a strategy and a plan to better communicate the work of the very important work of the department itself. And key amongst those would be communicating the work in the various programs, which you'll be hearing about, line of safety, policy and promotion, mineral regulation, and so on, to all our stakeholders on the various platforms, which would include the internet, obviously through public participation, and so on. And, of course, internal communication is also critical for the facilitation of the flow of information within our organization. It's important to motivate staff, keep them abroad of developments, and so on. And, excuse me, then at the broader level, as I was saying, the industry is facing significant challenges with particularly with regards to its image. And to this end, we are working together with organized business, organized labor, to turn around the image of the industry, both domestically and abroad. You will hear from my colleague, DDG Mabuza, in a while about the work of a tripartite initiative called MIGDEF, the Mining Growth Development and Employment Task Team. And we have a critical role to play in support of the work of that mission.
So that will take us to program.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Members. DG and colleagues, good afternoon. I'll be taking you through program two, which is the Management Safety Inspectorate. As you can see, one of our first key and broad mandates is the promotion of health and safety in the mining industry. And how do we go about doing that is that inspectors
that are in all the provinces audit health and safety management systems on mines and inspect the working places to make sure that the mining companies comply with Mining and Safety Act and regulations. And secondly, is that for every accident or fatality in the mining sector, the authority is expected to conduct an investigation or an inquiry to every death in the mining sector. And then thereafter, we make a recommendation and also take corrective action. And thirdly, is that last year, the amendment on Mining and Safety Act came into effect. And one of the key outcomes of that was that the admin fine system was reviewed. And the department will be issuing a guideline on the admin fine. And then secondly, is that we also need to make sure that we enforce the Section 20, which was part of the amendment of the Act. And the Section 20 talks to the appeal system in the mining sector. Because kind of faced with a problem whereby in some instances, employees can be dismissed before the appeal process is finalized. So that will also be enforced. And then coming to community issues, is that currently communities that are living close proximity to the mines are faced with a number of problems, mainly due to blasting operations that take place in the mines. So going forward, what we're going to do is that we want to develop a comprehensive strategy that will address the issues or problems of ground vibration, blasting, and lastly, dust control. And then under research and development is that we've got the Mining and Safety Council that is currently doing research in the mining sector to make sure that we eliminate any fatalities and occupational diseases in the mining sector. And the council has budgeted 29.5 million for the research. And the research program mainly focuses on falls of ground and seismic accidents, health issues, and so on. And the department has also partnered with the Council for Geoscience in making sure that we've got an integrated seismic monitoring system in the mining industry. And then the budget for the inspectorate for this financial year is 145,865,000. And this is divided into these sort of main components. The first one is the compensation of employees, and they were talking to the total cost of employees to the department. And the current complement of the inspectorate is that we've got 308 employees. The second item is the goods and services, and there the major cost is traveling and accommodation as inspectors go out to do audits and inspections. Investigations and inquiries. And then the capital assets will mainly procure equipment that is used by inspectors. And then lastly is the transfers. And that is the transfer that we make to the Management Safety Council, mainly to the Management Safety Council. Okay. And then the same budget presented in a different format is that you've got the head office component as well as the regional offices in all the provinces. As you can see, that the head office budget is 46,904,000, and the regional offices budget is 98,961. And the main sort of the components at head office is the Office of the Chief Inspector, and we've got three directorates, and that is the Chief Directorate for Policy Unit and Technical Support, and the two directorates, which is the Support Services Unit and the Legal Unit. And the regional offices are divided into three major chief directorates. The first one is the gold and platinum, which consists of Gauteng, Free State, and the Northwest. And the second one is coal, and that one consists of Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And then lastly, it's the other mines, which consists of Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and Western Cape. Thank you, Chair.
Ladies and gentlemen, sorry that the tea has arrived late. I think let's just quickly take a quick break while everybody gets some tea. We get back together again, and we drink our tea while we get the presentation as well. But I don't want people, the sugar levels to drop too low and they fall asleep. So get some refreshments and some tea, and then we are back together again. Thank you. I think we should get started because, DJ, I'm just afraid some people are saying we must not disturb the obituary of COPE here. And our COPE member is just explaining to what happened to the conference over the weekend. He says, no, it was just kiss and makeup and love. So the media has reported it wrongly. Can the COPE and TA have their caucus outside of this room? Please, you respect your... Yeah, we've got Julius's mother, the president of the Youth League's mother, also here, DJ. Hoshi Tihali. They are from one village, one province, and one area. DDG, I think we can go ahead.
Thank you, and honorable member. Just looking at program three, it's the mineral regulation program that deals with issuing of or granting of prospecting rights, mining rights, and also mining permits. And the focus of the program will be on the inspections of the pillars of the licensing regime, social and labor plan inspections, mining charter inspections, also the prospecting work programs and also mining work programs to see that mining companies are mining in line with the plans they've committed in the beginning when they were issued with licenses. And also inspections to focus on the environmental management programs that are implemented while they are mining. And the other key aspect will be rehabilitation, ensuring that the implementation of identified ownerless and derelict mine rehabilitation projects is carried out. And on an ongoing basis, also ensuring the adequacy of current provision for rehabilitation, so that when mines close, the state is not sitting with the liability of having to rehabilitate the mines that were previously rehabilitated. So the program focus is that. I'm not going to go into finances. The CFO covered the finances in detail in the beginning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DG, colleagues. The key activities of Program 4, whose mandate is to develop and review mining and mineral policies and legislation and to promote investment in the mining sector, we focus on the three critical areas in this financial year. First among those is the mine environmental management. My colleague, Kazi, alluded to the rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines, which is an area where we work together. In December last year, the department minister approved the rehabilitation strategy for derelict and ownerless mines. We are focusing on the finalization of the detailed rehabilitation action plan for the derelict and ownerless mines. Africa, but also related to the finalization and implementation of the rehabilitation procedures in the mining sector. We continue to offer assistance in the, towards marginal mines, particularly those that are affecting the environment as it relates to the flooding
in the historical mines for water pumping, so that the effects of environment related are minimized through our contribution, while we also enable these mines to continue operating. We also contribute towards the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development, which is currently the proceedings of which are currently in place in New York. And our intention is really to enhance the image of the mining industry, as my minister calls it, rather aptly, greening the mining industry. You would appreciate that we have been grappling with the balance between issues of development as well as the environment, not only at South Africa alone, but the world over. That is solely because in the past we've looked at sustainable development in the mining industry from the prism of the economic sphere only of sustainable development at the expense of the social and environmental aspect of sustainable development. For over 100 years that South Africa has been a mining jurisdiction, it was only in 1991 that we started introducing the environment aspect and beefing it up with the current principal act, the MPRDA, in 2004. In this context, I would urge honorable members to track the release of the statement of the United Nations Secretary General in the next couple of days. I've just been reliably informed that it will be the most positive statement that will be released on mining in the history of the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development. And this is solely because of the work that the mining jurisdictions have collectively worked to demonstrate the value of mining to addressing the issues of social development. The second leg of our key focus area at the branch is the promotion of investment in the mineral sector, mining and mineral sector. My colleague Jeremy Michaels alluded to the development and finalization of the strategy for growth, for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation of the industry. It is our intention to have this work completed by the 30th of June. It is the strategy that is focusing on two aspects. One, on competitiveness, ensuring that our industry becomes more competitive while at the same time transforming. The second focus area in this area is the achieve the incremental level of investment right across the value chain of our various mineral commodities, from exploration through mining to value addition or beneficiation, and to leverage value creation for South Africa Incorporated. The latest report of the Citigroup on mining corroborates our view that the South African industry remains and will continue for many decades to come the backbone of the economy of South Africa. That report indicates that South Africa remains the wealthiest mining jurisdiction in the world, followed by Russia and Australia at a distant third. And that tells the story. Among other things of promoting is to facilitate access for the black economic empowerment, coal mining companies, facilitate their access to the export facilities for their high-grade coal through the Richards Bay Coal Terminal. We have created a task team called the Coal Industry Task Team with stakeholders, and have so far secured 4 million tons of access capacity for the BEE coal miners. In relation to the transformation of the mining industry, this is the regulatory framework. It is our intention to finalize the review of the mining charter during this financial year. We will be taking the Geoscience Act through the parliamentary process in the months ahead. We would also be looking at the review of the Principal Act as well as the Diamond Amendment Act. All of this is to ensure that we create a further enabling environment for us to achieve the objectives of the strategy that we are developing, of achieving not only sustainable growth, but meaningful transformation of our industry. And lastly, is to conduct on a frequent basis the regulatory impact assessment so that we can gauge the extent to which we are making progress in achieving the goals that we have set for ourselves. I thank you.
Okay, that concludes our presentation, the forward-looking plan that we started implementing at the beginning of last month. And the two concluding slides, the second last, highlights the key priority areas, 52 million, on rehab and rehabilitation of ownerless and derelict mines, and 302 million on research and development. That's money that goes to Council of Geoscience and MinTech, 145 million for health and safety program, 174 for mineral and petroleum resource development, and 67 million for policy development and investment promotion. So the last slide, DJ, would you like to make concluding remarks? Just the last page.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, this presentation should not be seen in isolation from the medium-term strategic plan and estimate of natural expenditure, which is Chapter 31. The budget is presented, as presented currently, contains expenditure estimates for the medium term, including transfer payments to the other implementing agencies, as you heard the presentation from Gazi. But it excludes the transfer budget of 621 million, and as it is reflected there, Chair, those figures that they are reflected there, I don't want to waste a lot of your time. And basically, I think that's it, Chair, without further wasting a lot of your time.
Thank you very much, DG, KDG. Members, the floor is yours. Honorable Kikhali, Mbuni,
thank you very much. Chair Kinakabo, for the which you shall. You could have a little like a carriage, a children, and you would a research or the president on the mine for a regular value of a safety for a public hearing. But you are not so good from the other people who bale mathata a mantšhitši gore le sebela bale bothata wa re borobala kae ka re dintlo di ye di apharoga diao and then ba bangwe ba ditlhoka le metse ditsela di thibegile and bana ba hema lerole ba kgausi gore na tšheletso ene nkane e sa dutsiwa ya thuša batho baua inseta gore ba go dire di sa researche ka gore batho ba le ba nle bothata ke fa mothala ka dimine tse re kgonneng go di etsela a ke tse go rena potšišo yaka e maleba le ka mokgo ke kweleng go dira di-presentation ka gona na ke a leboga.
Honorable Nguni, can you just translate this? The secretary does not understand. Can you just translate?
No,
I was asking about the money that they have allocated for research that we went to Sekukuni, Madagsuku, and even Northern Cape. Why can't they take that money and help those people? Because they don't have the houses, they're suffering, and the water, and even electricity.
Chief Inspector, I only hear a little bit of Sipedi Metsi and those type of things. That's why I was asking. Honorable Nguni?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask the one just an overarching question, the general question that is being asked is the issue, policy issue that is pushed by the Youth League and some other mining magnates, so to say, of the nationalization of the mines. I just want to find out from the department, though each and everyone has got his own perspective or his own idea or interpretation, if we were to nationalize the mines, how much do we... Are we going to lose as far as revenue is concerned, as far as job creation is concerned, as far as social responsibility is concerned, and who tends to benefit if the mines are really nationalized? I just want to hear the department's view on this issue of nationalization of the mines, if really it's possible. My second question, Chairperson, is on the issue of transformation of the mining sector. If you read a book by Patrick Bond on looting Africa, you hear how he laments on how South Africa actually, or Africa in general, is still being looted, of which, unfortunately, China is now one of the countries that they are seeing as it's gunning for the looting of Africa as well. I just want to find out from the mining, from the department, what plans they have in place, or accept the mining charter, or what strategy do they have to transform the mining sector, you know, from the historically disadvantaged individuals' perspective that they also own the mines. We know the BEE is not only to have equity in the mining sector, but also to have in management skills and the like. But at the end of the day, you know, we like to see those mine workers, people who go underground on a daily basis, it could be surveyors, it could be the mine workers, also having a share in that mining area, in the mines. Now, the 26% that the department has got as a target, I think it's by 2014 that it must, 26% must fall in the hands of the black or historically disadvantaged people. How does the department see that happening, knowing that it's a very capital-intensive industry, and there's very few people who are technically qualified to run these mines? What's the strategy of the department to make sure that there is a target, really that that transformation takes place, not window dressing? My last question, Chairperson, is on the try to make the mining industry more safer, especially the issue on health and safety, on the issue of implementation of the seismic or early detection devices, or detection of seismic waves or tremors due to mine blast or activity. From some studies, they said that South Africa or even in some areas that you can actually not tell or predict an earthquake or an earth tremor until now, perhaps in a few minutes or before it really actually happens. Now, taking that into consideration, how does the department view this program helping in improving safety on the mines? The early, as they planned it, early detecting of seismic waves or earth tremors or due to blasting by mining activities. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mashambam.
Chairman, I'm not sure which DDG it was who dealt with the rehabilitation aspect, and there's a budget of $52 million for ownerless and derelict mines. Now, has the department got any guidelines as to whether there's a real need for rehabilitation or not. There's clearly a need for rehabilitation when the environment is continued to suffer the effects of the mine. But if one takes the example of the diamond mines on the West Coast, where rehabilitation is being done at huge expense, to no real advantage. There's no environmental damage that's continuing to occur. The environment is being somewhat restored to where it might have been previously. The stocking rates for livestock farming is absurdly low. And to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions rehabilitating those areas for little or no benefit seems absurd, particularly when Honorable Degala's point is made about the huge needs for funding for real issues exist. So I'm just wondering whether this kind of blanket to rehabilitate every mine at whatever cost, or is there some kind of assessment done on value for money and obviously the impact, continuing impact on the environment. Thank you.
Honorable Sinclair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, the first issue is my old song about the minister not being here today.
Excuse
him. Okay. Was he in advance?
Well, the committee has accepted the apology.
Yeah, but once again, you know, there's a tendency that the NCOP must always be satisfied with the apology, which I don't think it's so acceptable, but be it as it may, it brings me to the issue that was raised by the Honorable Nguni in terms of the nationalization. We know what's the viewpoint of the minister, and it seems of the government, but I think it would be fit and proper to engage the minister and not necessarily officials on this policy issues and so on. But I add my voice to the impact that if nationalization must take place, what is going to be the impact on the industry as a whole. The second issue is, Chairperson, the reason I was late was I was looking for the state diamond trader that got lost on its way to Kimberley. There was a decision announced by the president of the country, President Mbeki, that the state diamond trader will relocate to Kimberley. And I asked the minister a question, and she responded. The minister said, yeah, it's not going to happen because of the pricing model. But this cluster, Chairperson and officials, deal with the whole issue about the economic imperatives of our country. And as long as we stick with the current developmental patterns of this country, we're not going to grow the economy where it's supposed to grow. It's not necessary to grow Cape Town and Durban and Gauteng. We must grow Katu, Tabazimbi, other places, if we want to succeed in the turnaround strategy to address the real challenges of our time. Now, in terms of that, there was a strategic decision that the state diamond trader will relocate back to Kimberley. And the question I want to ask is, what is the rationale because it's not materializing? What's the rationale behind not implementing the decision? Then the next issue is the one about the social and labor plans. And the majority of my questions is regarding the Northern Cape because I'm from there. If you take a big mine like Kumba, and I'm saying it with due respect towards them, they don't adhere, not just Kumba, but many of these mines, they don't adhere to the prescriptions in terms of the social and labor plan. And it's necessary that the government and the department specifically must be much more stringent in terms of how do they follow up once the mining license has been approved regarding the specifics in the social and labor plan. Also regarding the water, there's a big crisis looming in Katu regarding water. The Vaal-Gamagara pipeline, which runs from the Vaal up to the Kalahari, does not have capacity anymore. The quality of the water that the mine is supposed to put back in that pipeline, is you can't use it. They can't even use it for the gardens, apparently. So my question is, what is the department doing in terms of issues like the specifics in the social and labor plan and so on and so forth? The last issue is about funding. It's fine and well to say that we want transformation by 2040, but it seems that the funding of those transactions is from a government perspective, is not always there. Am I right to say that the National Empowerment Fund doesn't fund mining transactions? Because people approached me and said that the NEF doesn't fund mining transactions. It's only the IDC. So can we get clarity in terms of the government institutions like the NEF and the IDC and the other entities in terms of funding BE deals? Thank you.
Baba Kamere.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I'd like to thank the DG. Each time this committee goes, there's somebody from the DG's office, and I'm sure who then reports directly. This is very good. Thanks very much, DG. And on the inquiries that I sent about your, I don't know whether it's your stepmother or stepchild or stepdaughter, the other department, I was assisted also. Thanks very much. The one question or comment would be the issue of an acting somebody in a new department. I would get clarity on that because. Secondly, just to get clarity on the issue whether our minister has signed the performance thing with the president. And if there's a possibility, I would personally like to have a copy, if possible. And thirdly, well, there are five priorities of government. The department, if it zooms into these five priorities, where does it think and feel that it will contribute more on these priorities? And fourthly, what changes are anticipated after the DG and all other officials met the president about the efficiency and working faster, smarter, and so on? After that meeting, is there any change going to take place? All the issue about inquiries about dust and so on have been asked, but my question would be, there's a mine there in Mpangeni, Exaro, which is next to Madlangala, and people have been complaining about dust, and for some years. What would we research and investigate now if we go to that community? Because we want some speedy interventions. I see sometimes they take me to far-flung areas and they show me these dust collectors. Then they say, hey, the levels are low, you know, it's not an issue. But people are coughing. One other thing I was trying to check was the use of consultants, and I was trying to check, where do you fit them in your budget? Do you fit them in as part of services, goods, or so? I just want some clarity, because I did see that you already use some consultants. The issue about ownerless and delirium mines Now, on the estimates, you go to the on mineral regulation, the objectives and measures, which I kept on reading and reading. One of them was saying they'll issue 27 new mining rights within a year. And I was thinking, and I was counting areas in KwaZulu-Natal and saying 1 year, 1 year, 1 day. where exactly does the department have a plan of these 27? Or are they going to be conscious to that, that if these applications come in, they are going to be spread right through the country, so that Honorable Sinclair is a little, is comfortable. But one other one which said they are going to be conducting 1,380 environmental compliances and actually 140 charter inspections in a year. That's quite a lot. Do you have the capacity to do that? I remember at one stage there was a shortage of the inspectorate. Now, if you, this week I just want to check if you really do have the capacity. Lastly, I just ask myself what the department does if it faces a challenge where mine doesn't comply. I've been asking other officials indirectly, and the mine doesn't comply, they do this. Still it doesn't comply, they do this. Still it doesn't comply, they do this, the same thing. What would ultimately happen? One mining boss said, hey, well, naughtily. If the government feels that I'm not complying, they must just close the mine. Now, you weigh against those two. If the 2,000 people are employed and you close the mine, how do you close that gap? Because I understand there's a gap in the act that would make government or the department not to act precisely if there's no compliance after a number of times. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kamei. Honorable Chen.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think every time when we talk about China, I think people turn around and look at me. I think maybe just because I'm a South African and I can speak and I can read in Mandarin, that's why. Yeah. Obviously, I think, you know, my question is, you know, through the program four, you know, which is promote investment in the mining sector. And I think recently there's a lot of Chinese mining investors, which in our country here already. Obviously, just like I said, I understand their language, they speak Mandarin. So I recently, you know, unfortunately receiving certain of a complaint regarding was they don't get a lot support, you know, from the provincial or the local government. I'd like to know, you know, if the department ever established a one-stop service, you know, to helping and giving a support, you know, to all those investors. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chen. Just before I give over to the department to answer, I think Honorable Sinclair will be failing. I'm not the spokesperson of the minister, but I think we have shifted the committee meeting. It was supposed to be yesterday, and then we have shifted it to today. And Wednesday is cabinet days. And just in regard to the apology for the minister, that's why we have accepted the apology, was that we, this committee, has accepted it, shifted the date. So I think you've got to blame yourself for that, because you were part of the shifting of the date. But you understand.
I'm not blaming the minister, I'm blaming the committee chairperson.
Oh, but you should blame yourself then. So you yourself is to blame, and I don't know, you can't blame Mr. Lokota, Mr. Shiloa, they are not part of this committee. So you've got to take the blame, Honorable Sinclair. DG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And indeed, Chairperson, I wanted to start with the issue that we have just raised. Just to say that the minister always wants to be at these meetings. And it's not out of disrespect for Parliament that the minister is not here today. It was due to circumstances that were totally far beyond her control, which the Honorable Chairperson now has actually articulated. And you articulated it better than me, Honorable Chairperson, because I wouldn't be in a position to say that it is the fault of the committee. But thank you for saying that on my behalf. And I'm glad that the committee accepts this. Thank you very much. One-stop service for investors. With regard to mining, we really don't have what we would call one-stop service. But our one-stop service are our regional offices. In the nine provinces, we have located a department of regional offices of the Department of Mineral Resources. That's where any investor who comes into South Africa would then be getting his or her assistance with regard to the issue of mining. And one of the challenges that are really there is that unlike in other jurisdictions, where an investor, when he arrives at the airport, already there is information indicating what are the investment opportunities that investor can have. We don't have that in South Africa, where immediately upon arrival you just get those investment opportunities. You have to settle in, do your due diligence, and on the basis of that due diligence, you will then be able to understand what is happening. But electronically, we are, if you go and look at our website, you will see what it is that you have to do in order for you to be able to invest in the South African mining industry. We are trying to improve our NMPS so that our NMPS becomes that instrument for the promotion of the mining industry in South Africa. We are in the process of trying to improve it so that when you arrive in South Africa, at the press of a button, you can then be able to see which areas are still available for applying for prospecting rights. We have been delayed to improve this because of issues of confidentiality and all those things. So we are in the process now of surmounting that, and once that is surmounted, we will then be confident that, you know, whenever one wants to get information in relation to mining in South Africa, that person then can be able to get that information electronically. Non-compliance, Honorable Gamede, you know, the issues that we have raised are the issues that have made South African mining companies at times to take advantage of the concern that government has for other socio-economic issues. Legally, in terms of Section 47, if a license holder fails to comply with the conditions of his or her license, the department must close the mine, must revoke the license, which will then result in the closure of mine, which will then result in the retrenchment of workers, which will then result in the other socio-economic ills that are always attendant with unemployment. The government has a responsibility to the South African society as a whole. And it is for that reason that before we resort to the provision of Section 47, we always try to assist the company to comply. The law also makes that provision. Section 47 must be the last resort. And it is for that reason that we hardly invoke the provisions of Section 47, because of the socio-economic consequences that will befall our societies. So the question is, should we enforce compliance no matter what the consequences? And my submission is that not at all. We must try first to assist the offending company to comply with the requirements of the law so that we can indeed avert those socioeconomic ills that will befall our communities as a result of the closure of the mines. If you look what is happening in Welkom, nowadays, it is a consequence of unemployment because of the closure of mines in that area. So closing the mines has got other unintended socio-economic consequences, and therefore we always have to be very, very, very careful as we apply the provisions of that law. The number of mining rights, whether we'll be able to grant those mining rights, 27 mining rights. The basis upon which we arrive at these figures, which we've then set as targets for the year, is the realistic assessment of the situation. We look at the capacity that the department has, and then from there we go and look, you know, at the already existing prospecting rights that are in the pipeline. Because for you to be able to issue a mining right, you must have issued a prospecting right. And again, you also have to look at what are the, how many of those that are on the verge of graduating from prospecting rights to mining rights. Then against the capacity that you have, including the resources that you have, including money, including warm bodies, etc., 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 you then begin to do your what you consider to be a reasonable target for the year. And as to how they are spread all over South Africa, we don't do that kind of an exercise of ensuring perhaps an even spread or perhaps focusing on other areas, because mining rights get granted on the basis of the applications, which applications get informed by the geology and the mineralization of that particular area. We may want to grant licenses to the Eastern Cape because Eastern Cape is economically depressed. But if there are no takers for those minerals that prevail in the Eastern Cape, it's not possible for us to do that. We cannot then say that, no. A person who's applying for coal in Waterberg or platinum in the Eastern Limb, you can say, no. There are many applications already in this area. Go and apply in the Eastern Cape. He'll tell you that, no, you want me to go and apply for gravel in the Eastern Cape. You want me to go and apply for sand, you know. So where those applications then get clustered is informed by the appetite for a particular commodity that the investors have. So we don't have, you know, an influence on where you have to apply. Use of consultants, yes, consultants are under professional services, under services, goods and services. Yeah, you'll find your consultants there. The five priorities, where is the DMR going to contribute mostly? It's in the job, in the creation of decent jobs. That's where we are going to mostly contribute as the DMR, because we are an economic department and we belong to an economic cluster. And the economic cluster focuses, among other things, mainly on those, on the creation of decent jobs. Anticipated changes after the meeting with the president? Yes. We plan to reduce our, as we indicated, right before the president had that meeting. We anticipated that there would be that call. And it was for that reason that we started doing the technical work of reducing the turnaround time by half. So that will be the change that you'll be seeing in our administrative processes as a result of this, among others. So there will be other changes which are going to be informed by the performance, by the monitoring and performance evaluation policy that we are currently engaged with the presidency. acting person in a new department. You first create an organizational structure. And in any new organization, there will be vacant posts. And as a result of the responsibilities that attach to posts, it becomes necessary that those posts must be filled, more particularly at senior level. That's why you'll see people at junior level being acting DG, acting deputy DG, acting chief director. That's how acting gets created. It's because of the priority that you attach to a particular function and the responsibilities that are attendant thereto. The minister's performance agreement, I haven't seen it, honorable member. And I don't know whether she will allow me to look at it. And I don't know whether also she will allow you to have a copy of it. But as a matter of fact, because I saw her diary, she did sign a performance agreement. If what is reflected in a diary on that day is something to go by. Relocation of the State Diamond Trader to Kimberley. There was a statement to that effect, that because there is history that links diamonds to Kimberley, and therefore it was important then that the State Diamond Trader had to go to Kimberley. But so many things have happened since then. One being the challenges that currently bedevil the State Diamond Trader. From a practical point of view, therefore, it would have been unwise of us to transfer the State Diamond Trader to Kimberley when it is still bedeviled by problems. As we speak, there are a number of challenges that we are still trying to address insofar as the State Diamond Trader is concerned. The State Diamond Trader still doesn't have personnel of its own, still contracting DBS to carry out those responsibilities. I think that perhaps in the fullness of time, when the State Diamond Trader is up and running, is on its feet, a decision can then be taken whether to relocate the State Diamond Trader from where it is. Remember that when we implemented the State Diamond Trader for the first time, it was on a pilot basis. We're supposed to learn certain lessons out of it. Now, the location of the State Diamond Trader, therefore, will also be informed by those lessons that we have learned in the process of implementing the State Diamond Trader as it currently stands. So, Honorable Sinclair, I don't know whether ultimately the State Diamond Trader will go to Kimberley in 2014, or in next year, or in years to come, because that decision will be informed by the practical reality that obtains on the ground. My handwriting is social and labor plan. Company is not adhering to prescripts. Yes. If you look at the program of mineral regulation, you will see that one of the key activities that they will be doing are the inspections of social and labor plan, etc., etc., etc. Because our experience has taught us that when companies apply for us. They come with very nice social and labor plans to us. And we grant them licenses on that basis. But they don't implement. They don't adhere to those prescripts and those conditions of license. It has to be remembered that the social and labor plan is constitute part and parcel of the conditions of the license of license holder. And if anyone then violates the terms and conditions of the license, the provisions of Section 47, going back to the question that was raised by Honorable Gamed, the provision of Section 47 can then be invoked. And then again, that's where now you have to find again this balance. Do you close the mine, or you go to the company and say to the company, Company A, you said this is what is going to happen. We are engaged in that process with a number of companies as we speak. Rehabilitation for ownerless and derelict men, whether there are any guidelines to determine the need, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, honorable members. In December this year, the minister approved the rehabilitation strategy. The contents of the rehabilitation strategy talk to the priority of those areas and the need for that rehabilitation to take place. We have got a multitude of these ownerless and derelict mines, which it will be very, 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 which I'm definitely sure that I'll never be able to deal with all of them during my tenure as the Director General of this department. And it is for that reason, therefore, that we have now to prioritize and look at those areas that constitute serious threat to the health and life of the South African communities. So, indeed, we don't just simply go and rehabilitate willy-nilly. We get informed by the strategy, which strategy then points us to the priority areas as to which areas we have to rehabilitate first. Nationalization of the mines. How much are we going to lose? Honorable members, let me make this point, that this budget is informed by our strategic plan. And our strategic plan flows directly from the policies of government. And insofar as mining is concerned, there is no policy on nationalization. And therefore, we couldn't design any program, we couldn't undertake any activities relating to nationalization because it's not part and parcel of the policy of government. I would understand if this presentation related to the policies that we need to make or we need not make, because in that case we could talk about whether there is a need for us to have developed a policy on nationalization. But this is about implementation, because when we talk about budget, we are talking about policy implementation. So we haven't, therefore, undertaken any activity outside the contents of the current policy. And we have not, therefore, done an assessment as to what will be the cost benefits of nationalization in South Africa. But I promise you, the day this government takes a decision in that regard, as part and parcel of our business plan and budgeting, we will then do that cost-benefit analysis. But right now, we haven't done anything to that effect. So we have got no information relating to what will be the benefits, what will be the disadvantages, what will be the losses, et cetera, et cetera. Transformation. Plans that we have on transformation, other than the freedom, I mean the the mining charter. Transformation is a broad concept. It's a broad policy concept. And we had to bring it to specifics through, among other things, the mining charter. So insofar as transformation is concerned, the tool and the instrument that we currently use is the mining charter, which is why we are currently reviewing that tool to see whether there is any need for us to improve on it or to abandon it and go and look for another tool. So outside the freedom, the mining charter, there is no other instrument that we have at our disposal, you know, to give effect to the process of transformation. Research and many problems. This again is another very problematic area, because mining as an activity takes place in rural communities, and those are the areas that are underdeveloped by their very nature. But the question is, on whose shoulders lie the responsibility for infrastructure development, that is housing, roads, water provision, electricity provision? Are those the responsibilities of the private sector, or those are the responsibilities of government? The private sector will argue and say that we are making our contribution towards the revenue, towards the fiscus, through the taxes and the royalties that we pay. And we expect the government to use those royalties and those taxes for purposes of ensuring the service delivery to its people. So we cannot then, over and above that, be saddled with the responsibility of doing what municipalities and provincial governments and national governments ought to be doing. That's why we have departments of national housing, water affairs, etc., etc. So that's the challenge that we have. But through the instrumentality of social and labor plan, we have tried to say to the private sector that, private sector, you are not an ordinary mining sector, you are not an ordinary business sector. You are a business sector that is dealing with what is considered to be a national patrimony, which then becomes the heritage of all South Africans. You cannot be treated like manufacturers or any other person. You have additional responsibilities. That's why you don't only pay taxes, you also pay royalties. So if that is the case, you must at least shoulder some of the responsibilities that ought to be that not naturally ought to be shouldered by the private sector. That's why our law makes provisions for social and labor plan. But it's not going to be possible to shift the responsibility of the provision of the social infrastructure from where it belongs, which is the municipalities, and shift it to the private sector. So that's the problem. Because we also have to take into consideration the fact that once we start saying to the mining companies, they must go beyond what other companies are doing in terms of their contribution to the fiscus, we are making our mining environment difficult. We are making it less attractive to the investors. They'll tell you that the cost of doing business in South Africa are too high, and therefore will go to Congo. We no longer enjoy the benefit of political instabilities that used to befall our neighbors in Congo and other countries, because there is relative peace in those areas. And as a result, they constitute very serious competition to South Africa in terms of them being an attractive investment destination. And therefore, whatever we do, we must not compromise our competitiveness as an investment destination in South Africa. Right now, this Fraser Institute report has put us very low in terms of us being a competitive mining, what you call in South Africa. And it is because of such small things, where because of a community in, among other things, a community in Temba, what is it? Yeah. In Balfour, when they cannot get roads, when they cannot get a hospital, they go in toy to the gates of a mine, instead of going to the people who are responsible for the rendering of those services, which is basically the government. So, and once that happens and it becomes a norm in South Africa, that whenever communities are unhappy about service delivery, they will go and demand those services from the mines, it becomes a problem. I don't know whether there are any other things. Oh, yes. There are these blasting things. Well, those are very scientific. The scientists here will deal with those issues. Thomas, are you going to do that?
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question asked regarding the blasting problems and the dust problem that is caused by the mining companies. To start off by saying that every mining company has got a responsibility to make sure that they don't have a negative impact on the surrounding communities. So I'm glad that the Honorable Member has raised this issue, and the Department will make a follow-up with the Exaro in KZN in Mandlangala. And then the other issue that was raised regarding houses and roads, I think the DG has covered that issue adequately. And then lastly, there was a question raised on the seismic network. I think it was by Honorable Mr. Mguni. Is that currently we don't have sort of any scientific system whereby we can be able to predict the time and the location of a seismic event. What we're looking at with this system is that we want to evaluate what action is taken by mining companies once they sort of detect any seismic activity within their mines. And one of the things that the mines need to do is to make sure that they withdraw people in seismic prone or active areas, and then maybe at a later stage then allow employees to go back and work in those areas. That's what we're looking for at this moment. But scientifically, one is a sort of a system where you can be able to predict the location and the time of a seismic event. Thank you.
Members, have all your questions been answered? Any outstanding? Honorable Least and Honorable Longoni?
Mr. Chairman, a question of our own health and good well-being. This room is getting increasingly hot, and even if I take my jacket off, it's stuffy and horrible. Is there any chance of getting some fresh air into it? Mr. Chairman, the DG, yeah, he's clearly an advocate, and he's disappeared. Where's he gone? He argues very well. The point that has been missed there, the question of prioritizing rehabilitation of owners and derelict mines, I understand. I mean, the $52 million is not going to go very far. But what I was really referring to, and he's back, was the question of private existing mines and their obligation to do rehabilitation, and the possibility of saying to De Beers, you've spent 100 million rand to rehabilitate 400 hectares of useless land on the West Coast. Surely we can say to them, let's take that 100 million rand and use it to build housing or develop new industry in that area, which is now so depressed because of the closure of so many of the diamond mines. I'm saying, is there any flexibility in this?
Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up on the historical disadvantage South Africans. That's on page 40 of the State Plan on Promotion and Promotion and Promote and Transform the Mineral Sector under the outcomes Regulate Mineral and Mining Sector to Achieve Transformation. For instance, it says a number of or extent of company compliance with 40% HDSA in management. It says 100% for the current financial year. My question, Chairperson, was that besides the mining charter, for instance, it says 40% HDA is in management. We understand all the PEE issue, you know, broad-based political empowerment, what it entails, you know, promoting skills, management, and so forth. Now, I'm saying here, if you say you're going to reach 100%, for instance, in management, my question was, we don't have much technical people or people for technical skills to, say to be in to occupy those positions. And then how do you enforce it to the private sector? If we don't have, are there any other means that you can enforce the mining sector that perhaps they say recruit and graduates at university level to promote them to such to those key positions in the mining sector, or in terms of where the mining sector, you know, is, as I said, is capital intensive. We want to have by 2014, 26% of the mines must be in the hands of no. Blacks, in short, or previously disadvantaged people, could be women or African or white women. Now, my question was, other than that stipulation in the mining charter, seeing that the black people are interested to have a stake in the mining sector, but they might not have even have finance to buy shares or to have a stake in mining. Now, what will the department do to make sure that it achieves the 26% target by the year 2014? That was my question, Chairperson. Bearing in mind that we understand that there will be broad-based black economic empowerment, Chairperson.
Clear? Yeah, Chet, the question I raised about the water and so on hasn't been responded. But you see, I want to come back to this issue about the state diamond trader, because on various levels, there's a lot of debate that needs to take place around this thing. The DG indicated that Kimberley has got a history with diamonds. It's not true. Kimberley is diamonds. It doesn't have a history with diamonds. Kimberley is diamonds. Now, I raise these issues because on a daily level, when I'm in that area and when you go out to various areas, you see the legacy of a wrong approach to mining. And I'm raising these issues to say, let's learn from those history that the DG is talking about. When Johannes De Beer found that diamond, there was nothing in Kimberley. Similarly to now to various other places. For us as government and for you as government, the challenge is, how do you position yourselves in terms of that developmental opportunity? That is the challenge. And the motivation that I have is to say, the one lesson that we've learned is, if you don't add value to the product where you mine it, the community is losing out. Then the net result is places like Bornolis, like Kimberley, like Jagersfontein, like other places where you know better. So the point in argument, DG, is the following. If the government is very sincere about this transformation, it's not just about the transformation of BE and whatever. It's about the transformation of the whole developmental pattern of South Africa. Then the state diamond trader must come back to where it was supposed to be in the first place. Then we must start motivating even the department to say we must have an iron ore smelter in South Africa closest to the source of that product, if it's iron ore or manganese or what it is. And that, I think, where we as South Africans are missing the point. So I just want to put that record straight. Linking to that, it was referred to the roles of the mines and whatever and whatever. And the comparison that you had with the municipalities. Typically, a municipality like Gamagara, where Katu is, that municipality is supposed to be in the forefront of luring investors to that area. But for various reasons, be it political, be it administrative, be it whatever, it's not happening. Then the mines, like Kumba, must go out and put a certain portion of their revenue every year and their profit aside to say, okay, we're going to assist the municipality with the following, the following, the following. The ideal situation is where mines focus on mining because that's their core business. But because of their partners, which in this case is government, not producing what they're supposed to be, supposed to produce, then they jump in and say, okay, but there's a pump that's not working. There's this, there's a road, let's assist and so on. So the point that I want to make is, I think in theory, your approach is maybe right, but in practical reality, it's a partnership between national government, provincial government, local government, and the developers. Which brings me to the issue that you referred to, the one-stop shop, and said, okay, the regional office is there. You know, I didn't want to engage on this, Chairperson, but maybe I must, because there's a lot of mining activity in Kimberley and so on. I get a lot of complaints about the effectiveness and efficiency of the mining, your department in Kimberley. Issues about turnaround time and those practical things. So the question I want to ask you, DG, is what are you doing in terms of the effectiveness and efficiency? The last issue is, Chairperson, you know, I also sometimes get confused like the DG with this Freedom Charter things, you know. I don't know if it was 55 or 2008 and so on. But I understand where you come from. The only thing is, DG, you must qualify. Do you believe in the 1955 Freedom Charter or the 2008 one?
Taking from that, the Honorable Sinclair was debating the other day in the House, and he says that the Freedom Charter was drawn up in 1958 or something, 2008, was it? 1958, yeah, so that's why he's still got the Freedom Charter in his head, because it's totally the wrong date, and the minister had to help him with the dates. Oh, okay. I've seen on a slide there that government is spending or is going to spend something like 35 million to assistance to mines in pumping, in respect of pumping of water. But isn't that money that could be utilized somewhere else? Because these mining houses, you know, we did some oversight as committee on a few of the mining houses. And when you talk to them, then they suddenly realize that they have not fulfilled their social duties in terms of the contract or in terms of the application, what they've applied for and what they've put in the contract. We were at, as Baba Gamere said, at one area in Richards Bay, KZN, where the houses has cracked in terms of the blasting, sand and all that. Also in Sukukuni, at Anglo Platinum. Was it Anglo Platinum? Madikhali? Yeah. Where the houses are a meter away from the shaft. A meter. Not, is it a meter? A couple of meters, that's, or 100 meters, sorry, 100 meters away from where the mining, physically mining, is taking place. And those houses will collect any time on those people. You know, even when the trucks pass or something like that. So, I mean, and these guys are not even spending money on that. Only when we go to them and engage them, then they realize, oh, we forgot we have put that and that in our application. Shouldn't you link with that question also then look at, think of, like environmental affairs has got now your green scorpions. You put them maybe in your mining scorpions. So that they can also patrol Kimberley and those areas as well, where the Honorable Sinclair is from. But just to see that these companies comply, because I think that we should do as what the Competition Commission are doing at the moment. Fine them heavily. Just fine them. Because they are making money. I see Australia has now put tax on the mining industry. And now the mines are saying, hey, but why can't Australia be like South Africa and Africa that's not taxing people? They are now afraid. Because, I mean, we are still a bit too lenient in terms of our taxes and all that for these mining companies. And some of the money are not even staying in South Africa. Your Rio Tinto, BHP, Billiton, Anglo, De Beers, those monies are going out. I mean, they are listed on the JS, on the London Stock Exchange and New York Stock Exchange. So I think, Chief Inspector, you should really get some sort of, you should ask Minister Mthethwa and get some sort of a police patrol or a force. You establish your own mineral resources force and patrol these companies. The last question, Alex Core, DG. I just want some clarity about Alex Core. We went on an oversight visit to Alex Core. And at one stage, one of my comrades in the NA said that Alex Core does not report to this committee. Alex Core report to DPE. Speaking to the Minister of DPE, he says, no, you as Mineral Resources Committee, you've got the right to call Alex Core to order. And coming that from the minister, I went back to the chairperson of the committee of DPE. I said, hey, but the minister says, he says, no, Alex Core report to me and not to you. I said, it doesn't matter who they report to, they'll have to come and report. So if you can just give us a bit of clarity, how far have you got charge of Alex Core, or can we call them to order? Because really they're out of order there. Thanks, DG. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. You know, this is the kind of a question that I got this morning from the portfolio committee in relation to Petro SA. There was a stage when Alexco used to report to the Department of Minerals and Energy, but they then migrated Alexco to DPE because it's a state-owned enterprise. But now, you have every right to call Anglo-American, although you don't own Anglo-American. You have every right to call DBS, although you don't own DBS, because you exercise oversight insofar as the implementation of the MPRDA is concerned. But you cannot call Alexco and ask them about the health of their financials. You cannot call them and ask them about corporate governance at Alexco. It's none of your business. But you can call Alexco and ask Alexco, Alexco, why are you not complying with your environmental management plan? Why are you not complying with your social and labor plan? Why are you not operating in terms of your mining plan? You know, because those are operational matters that are germane to the area over which you have an oversight. But insofar as issues of governance, the issues of shareholder matters are concerned, that then becomes DPE. So you can call Alexco and make Alexco to account. You can call Alexco and ask them, why is it that there is no transformation at Alexco? You can call. Because those are the issues that relate to the area over which you have an oversight. The houses that crack. I think we need to relook the standards here, because when we adopted the standard that says that houses must be 100 meters away from the operation, the understanding then was that those houses would be safe, wouldn't be affected by mining. But the experience that we have now indicates that that's not the case. They get affected by blasting and all those things. And we believe that mining companies have a responsibility to repair those houses, because they are responsible for their damage. They are responsible. The kind of argument that we're advancing in relation to building houses and all those things doesn't apply in relation to cracking houses, because those houses are cracked. There is a causal link between the damage that is caused to those houses and the activities of the mining company. So they must be brought to account. I mean, they must be taken to account. Now, the issue of brown scorpions for mining for the mining industry. I think the approach, if you look at the activities that we made mention there, Honorable Chair, you'll find that there is a lot of money now that is good. In terms of the programs, the mineral regulation program there has a lot of money that is allocated to it. It is the reason why that is the case is because right now we want to change our focus to inspection. You know, at the time when we were beginning to implement the MPRDA, the main focus at that time was to bring within the fold of the new act all those licenses that have been in operation in South Africa in the last 100 years. So the officials of the department were focusing mainly in ensuring that all those licenses get converted into the new mining regime in South Africa. Now that bulk of work has now been done, those people now will now be released to go and look at whether these companies now are implementing what they had said that they would be doing once they were applying their licenses. We took a conscious decision that those who will be the inspectors should start and cut their teeth. They must cut their teeth in the actual granting of licenses so that they can understand what it is that they will go and inspect when they now become inspectors. So if some of them now will now go and be the inspectors there. So you'll be seeing quite a lot of inspections right now, and you'll be seeing quite a lot of consequences that will be flowing from that. The effectiveness of the department at regional level, I agree. We have been receiving a number of complaints from the operators. And at the beginning of this year, I personally undertook a visit to all the provinces in that, what we're doing, we're auditing the systems. We're doing a systems audit, checking where there are problems, what actuates these delays that people are complaining about. And we identify those bottlenecks and we remove them. And as we currently speak, we are implementing a new system. A new system that has now begun to shorten the whole process of license granting and all that. So I take it that there has been a problem. And I believe that with that visit that I undertook to all the provinces in the month of January, and I completed it in round about February, and as a result of that, we came up with a plan. We are now in the process of implementing that plan. In June, we'll be evaluating the impact of that plan. We'll now be going to the regions again in order for us to evaluate the impact, whether this plan is effective or not. As to whether the regions are, as we speak, effective or not, I cannot put my right hand on my heart and say, indeed, they are effective, because we have not yet done the evaluation of that. But all what I can tell you is that the volume of complaints has reduced. And the people that I've been talking to, also even in the industry, have been telling me that there is a great deal of improvement. So we hope that will soon yield the results that are desired. Kimberly, as a diamond, you see, Honorable Sinclair, I think we must not be emotional about these things and be careful of creating precedents that will at a later stage come back and haunt us. I can imagine the people of Gauteng saying that the precious metals regulator must be located nowhere but in Gauteng, because Gauteng doesn't have history with gold, but it is gold. You can imagine people of Limpopo one day saying that, you know, anything that has got to do with auto catalyst converters has to be located in Limpopo and nowhere else, you know, because Limpopo doesn't only have a historical link with platinum, but it's platinum. So those are the things that we really have to be very, very, very careful about. Coming back to the issue of the state diamond trader, some people are telling us that this was just an emotional decision because of the fact that Kimberley is diamond. Because the state diamond trader is not going to address the location of the state diamond trader, is not going to address the problems that you are articulating. Because irrespective of where it is located, because bear in mind that if the intention is to beneficiate diamonds and therefore create jobs, you see, what we need to do is to put programs in place that will ensure that those plants get located in Kimberley. And therefore, I would have expected the people of Kimberley to motivate for the creation of cutting and polishing plants in Kimberley rather than the state diamond trader, which basically, again, the end state of it is envisaging the location of those trading houses, which will be located as satellites almost everywhere, meaning with that you can buy diamonds everywhere and anywhere. So if I were the people of Kimberley, I would insist that the bulk of cutting and polishing plants that need to be developed has to be in Kimberley. It was with that in mind that we negotiated with the Chinese a couple of years ago that the Chinese must train people from Northern Cape. We sent many people there for training in the Northern Cape, coming from the Northern Cape in Kimberley, in China. so that they would come back and begin to work on opening these plants. Those are the things that create jobs, not the state diamond trader. The officials, the bureaucrats that will be at the state diamond trader, perhaps will be even less than 10. And therefore, they cannot argue and say that the state diamond trader, if it's located there, is going to create jobs for us. It's not. So we must then find a way in which we can then ensure that Kimberley benefits from a developmental strategy which is designed around the diamonds, which are the history of Kimberley. So those are the things that I think we can begin to engage in, but not argue strongly for the location of the state diamond trader in Kimberley. And any flexibility on rehabilitation? I get your drift now, because I thought that you were referring to the ownerless and derelict mine. I will first respond as a government official, and after that I'll respond as a human being who is resident in South Africa and therefore alive to the challenges that face the people of this country. If I were to respond as a bureaucrat, I will say to you that unfortunately we have to apply the law as we find it. And the law is predicated upon the notion of the polluter pays. And therefore, since that is the case, that money is not meant for anything else other than for rehabilitation. It cannot then be migrated elsewhere. That would be if I speak as a bureaucrat, which basically is the actual state of affairs as we speak. But ideally, it would have been so nice if the money that is used for rehabilitation, more particularly before, if this money is getting deposited there, when it's still sitting there in the trust account, it can then be used in order to address other socio-economic problems in South Africa. But again, it will cause a fiscal confusion, because fiscals has to take responsibility of the socio-economic needs of the society. If that is the case, if we feel then that the mining companies need to pay more, should shoulder more of this responsibility, let's increase the tax. Let's increase the tax. But if we try and bring it in other ways, it's going to be a problem. If the Australians could increase the tax, why can't we? And the outcry, by the way, for Australia, you know, was not as big as it was here. And Australia's tax raise was how many times? How many times bigger than ours? It's more than 10 times bigger than ours. Yeah. But the same companies operate in both jurisdictions. When we're talking about 3% royalty here, they were crying. See, they are talking about 40% tax in Australia, there's no problem. So I'm not there, though. So I think let me end it there, Chair, before I get carried away and then say things that I will regret.
Thank you, DG. Members, are you satisfied? Questions been answered? I see heads are nodding. Honorable Nguni, your question not been answered. You're not happy. Data bar.
Yes, page 40. That page 40, Honorable Nguni, refers, that 100% refers to the activity of evaluation, not the actual extent of 40% compliance. Where's 40? Where's 40? Because that 100%, evaluate empowerment transactions and provide guidance to meet compliance criteria. So that's the activity that will be carried. And we would like to do 100% of our targets during that financial year. So, Gazi, can you add something there?
Thanks, DJ.
Honorable Nguni, also the as you raised the concern whether we'll be able to reach that target in 2014, I think the DG has already emphasized the point that there's a shift to inspection. When you look at your SLP, there are elements there of companies having to grow historically disadvantaged people into positions of management. So addressing the question of capacity development vis-a-vis reaching the targets in terms of compliance with the charter requirement. So it's a process that goes along with the stronger inspections on SLP. Companies will be forced to grow people into management responsibilities. Hence, that will assist us reaching the target.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm from Limpopo, as I said, and our councillors are really getting it very tough. They cannot even go and talk to the people. So as the DG was talking as a bureaucrat, now, as a bureaucrat, how can he help us with the ideas that can help those people to have their houses? Because they're suffering. They're not even working. And the children are not even going to the tertiary after they have passed their grade 12. You know, just a disaster.
Honorable Zinclair?
Yeah, Chairperson. I don't want to engage the DG in a two-way discussion about this issue about the state diamond trader. But the state diamond trader for us or for me was never about creating this huge number of jobs. It's about putting the instrument to the industry at the rightful place in the economic chain. Once you've done that, all these other issues that you referred to will then be a natural process that will develop on the peripheries of the economy. But don't focus on the state diamond trader. Look at the issue about smelters, about all those other things. That's the point that I want to make. But leave it, and we're certainly going to engage each other on that, Chairperson. But I think from the committee perspective, we must, once we in that area, we must go and visit the state diamond trader and the department assist us in terms of its role and function and everything that it entails. I don't know, my question about, two questions, is about, one about the NEF and the IDC hasn't been answered, and also about the water, but if I can use your liberty, Chairperson, just to ask, last year we had a oversight visit to Welkom regarding the Zama Zamas, and the department ably assist us. What is the latest situation with that whole illegal industry?
DG?
Thank you very much. The issue of smelters, that also is a function of economics, where the people will begin to say that rather than locating it at close to the source of the product, let me locate it close to the harbor so that I can then be able to export that. But I agree that it would be important if we can have all these these things spread all over. Unfortunately, business people have got their own ideas, and what informed them as to where they decide to locate the smelters, we don't know. That's why it would be very interesting if that responsibility can be shifted to the state. Because if that was the case, I would gladly say that we'll take a decision tomorrow. But unfortunately, the state is just a facilitator in the economy. It's not a player. And I think the debate that is going on there outside can also assist you in addressing this problem. I don't know how far it will go. But the NEF, The NEF also is an entity that doesn't report to us. And again, the structure of our mandate is such that ours is to regulate. And as to where the private sector raises money, we are outside it. That's why you find this problem now that is existing with regard to the BE transactions that were funded, you know, on terms that defeat the very same purpose for which BEs were created. So we don't have an influence as to what the NEF should fund. Just like IDC, even with IDC, we don't know. We don't. Some deals are funded by IDC, others are not. We don't know what is the basis. Some are even funded by PIC, others by the Standard Bank. We don't know what is the basis. Because that is just outside the realm of our mandate. And once we start jumping over that realm, I'll be in trouble with you because you'll call me and tell me that in terms of your mandate, these are the things that we're doing. You are busy doing things there that are outside your mandate. The water issue comes back also to the issue of inspection. It boils down to those things because issues relating to water form part and parcel of one's EMP. So as we rigorously and vigorously inspect the companies in terms of their compliance with their EMPs and mining plans, we will now begin to pick all those issues that you are raising, Honorable Sinclair, up. Okay. So what was the... Oh, welcome. To my relief, Honorable Sinclair, that responsibility has been taken out of my narrow shoulders and placed on the broader shoulders of the law enforcement agencies. So right now, I understand that there was supposed to have been a visit to Barberton by all the DGs of the law enforcement agencies. To go and deal with this matter. So I don't know the latest, Honorable. But all what I can tell you is that I'm so glad that it was taken out of my shoulders because I really didn't have the capacity to worm myself through those booby traps there and avoid the bullets that may be coming my way from those bandits.
Members, for the interest or for the sake of time, because I know members still have to catch buses and transport and all that, and your question about the houses and the work, and oh yeah, did you, and the assistance. When we were in Limpopo, Minister was there, and I think she also had a meeting with business and business sector, and I think one of the gentlemen was with her. Baba, you were in the Pope, no? Yeah. Regarding the when we took Parliament to the people there. Now, Honorable Matihali is from Limpopo, and she won't rest until she gets an answer.
Sorry, I forgot it. We are working with communities like the Mkhlotlo community and other communities around Limpopo to assist them to address those problems. And we believe that there is a way in which we can assist them. Because the social and labor plans of the companies must talk to the local economic development strategies that are developed there in that area. So the councillors, therefore, what they need to do is to indicate what are the social needs for the people of that area And then we can then take those, we can work with the companies as we are doing in those areas, and filter those issues that are so critical to come. Because in some areas, the councillors would tell us that, you know, we have a problem of housing here. And then we take the issue of housing and put it in their social and labor plan. Or they'll say that schools, et cetera, et cetera. It is possible. What I suggest we should do is for us to take a visit to the to that particular community, sit down with them, understand what their problems are, convene a meeting with the mining companies that operate in that area, together with local government, and we find a way in which we can begin to assist. Because companies are really very amenable to assisting. To the extent that what we can also do is to allow them to alter their social and labor plans, because they already have social and labor plans, others. So we can assist them to alter those social and labor plans and say to them that these are the burning community issues today. Let's remove what you had there as a hospital, because there is a hospital that is about 5 kilometers away or 2 kilometers away. But these people right now need water, which needs to sustain their life. And then you begin to put in water there. So we will find a way in which we can then begin to assist each other in this process. It is possible.
Matihali, you're happy. I see the smile.
I'm happy.
Thank you. Thank you. Honorable members, there's no more questions from your side. Honorable Lees, this is the last questions.
You can relax. Jim, it's not a question at all, it's simply a comment. This committee takes its work very seriously and we work very hard, but we also are a happy committee. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm so pleased that the DG's got a good sense of humour. It really does make our work that much nicer. Thank you very much.
It seems to me that the D had a change of heart, but that is very, very good, DG. Honourable members, let me hand over to Honourable Chen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that today we definitely have a very profuse engagement between our committee and the department. And I think we're all very impressed. You know, we have such a life and experience of the DG and with the full team, you know, of the department itself. And obviously, we thank you so much on behalf of our committee with all this informative presentation. And I'm sure in the future, you know, we will definitely engage with the department more, and we wish the department everything of the best, you know, for the progress forward. Thank you.
Yeah, so that remains nothing more to be said than with the powers invested. Broad powers invested in the Honorable Lees. We've still got some other things to do. Let me read the report of the Select Committee on Economic Development. Report of the Select Committee on Economic Development on Budget Vote 31 and Strategic Plan 2010/2011/2012/2013 of the Department of Mineral Resources, dated 12 May 2010. The Select Committee on Economic Development, having considered Budget Vote 31, Department of Mineral Resources report that it has concluded its deliberations thereon. Report to be considered. Can I get a proposal? KZN move. Honorable Gamede move. And Honorable Lees second. Okay. Thank you very much. DG, so... the report has been, and the strategic plan and budget vote has been accepted, and I don't foresee any problem in the House that it will be rejected, because the Honorable St. Clair will be the first one to say that they support this budget vote. Thank you very much, Didi, and the department, and all of the best, as Honorable Chen has said. And we hope to have a very fruitful engagements in the future again. You see, this committee is not so bad at all. You don't have to be afraid of us. As Honorable Lee said, we work hard, we play hard, and we also party hard. DG?
I know that is against protocol, Jefferson, that I have to speak after you have spoken. You know, I cannot resist the temptation to make an observation that in my 13 years as a Director General, I think this is the first committee that has been so special in the manner in which you deal with the issues and in the manner in which you relate to the officials. We thank you for that.
It's a pleasure, DG. We don't believe in fighting. If we fight, we walk out the door, we must talk to one another. We don't believe in going to bed cross, because you can see it's cold in Cape Town, so we need the warmth. The department can be excused now, DG, if you want to go. We've still got some few matters of the committee members. It won't be very long. You can help yourself with coffee, tea, and there's still some more stuff there. We don't want you to say tomorrow Parliament has got wasteful expenditure, please. Travel safe and safe journey home. Okay. Members, we've got an invitation. Members, we've got an invitation from four departments that are involved in hosting a Green Economy Summit: Department of Environmental Affairs, Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Science and Technology.